On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. So, what will it be for U.S. troops in Iraq to double down or draw down, to surge in with more or begin to turn the treads for home? The debate is white hot in Washington now. Just 12% of Americans support sending more troops to Iraq, according to a new poll. But the White House is reportedly leaning toward doing just that. Maybe 20,000, maybe 30,000. For how long is unclear. John McCain is all for it. Colin Powell, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, said yesterday a surge is a bad idea, that the U.S. is losing in Iraq, that there are no more troops, that it's time to pass the baton to the Iraqis. Up next on Point, it's crunch time, to surge or not to surge in Iraq. Joining me now from the Pentagon is Pam Hess, Pentagon correspondent for UPI. Pam, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, help us understand that, you know, it's always packaged as the Pentagon will recommend this or the Pentagon will recommend that. Is this going to be a Pentagon decision, a White House decision? What kind of recommendations have been made or are expected from the Pentagon itself?
The recommendation and planning process is a lot more complicated than most people understand. Right now, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff does have a group of recently returned senior officers, colonels, one-star generals, some lieutenant colonels sort of chained in the basement. But what they're coming up with is not some grand strategy. They are continually generating advice, looking at what's working over there, what's not working over there, and passing advice down the chain and then up the chain. But the Pentagon, the Joint Chiefs of Staff anyway, are not going to come up with some grand strategic plan and weigh in with the White House on that. What they're going to do is look at the different plans that are out there, the different possibilities, and let the president know what the risks are with each one. What are the potential risks? What are the potential benefits? And that way he can make the decision. It's going to be up in large part to the new secretary who gets sworn in today, Robert Gates. It's going to be up to Bush. The Joint Chiefs will make their recommendations, but in the end, they don't advocate for any particular plan. John Abizaid, the general in charge of U.S. Central Command, has a huge role in this. George Casey, the four-star general in charge of Iraq, will probably be the real decider in this one, and he'll make the recommendation to the White House as to what he thinks will work.
The decider, we've heard General Abizaid, top commander for the U.S. in the Middle East, arguing for a long time that increasing the size of the force would be counterproductive, that it would make folks angry in Iraq, the very people the U.S. is trying to help, it's been reported. So is that still his view, or has he come around to a surge proponent?
Well, there's different ways that you can surge. You can surge by adding more troops, or you can surge by stepping up the pace of operations, or you can surge by switching around what people do. I mean, in Iraq right now, we've got about 140,000 troops. At any given time, only 50, 60,000 of them are outside the wire. These are the combat troops. The rest are back doing headquarters, admin, logistics, intel. So you can take more of those people, some smaller number more, and put them out and surge that way and keep the top number together.
But as I understand, most of the talk is about 10 or 20 or 30 or even 50,000 more troops on the ground there by holding a lot there beyond the time they expect to go home and bringing others in sooner.
That is an idea that is just now gaining some ground. I started hearing that about 6 weeks ago from senior commanders over there saying, listen, the one thing that we've never tried in Iraq is actually having enough troops. We started out behind the ball. We were hoping that as Iraqi forces came on, that would sort of push us up over the edge. We were able to blanket and establish security. But as Iraqi forces have come on, so too has the threat in Iraq gotten larger. So we've always been behind the eight ball, according to these officers that I'm talking to. So they're saying, why not once can we just give it a try to actually put in enough troops that we can not only do what we need to do day to day, which is what they're doing, but also then have an offensive, a reserve force, a couple of divisions that can go around, put out fires, put the enemy back on his heels. The problem that people have, I think, in understanding Iraq is that every area of Iraq is different and demands a different response. Baghdad is an urban fight. It's largely sectarian. There's a lot that's going on there that we just cannot even penetrate. We cannot understand the levels of drama that are going on there. Anbar province is a little bit different. That's a place where the threat hasn't really changed. It's always been a Sunni insurgency. There's always been an element of al-Qaeda in Iraq, which Zarqawi used to head, and there's a new head there now. That is one one that could respond to a larger footprint of troops who can actually go after this sort of discrete enemy.
Yet I've heard Baghdad described as the first target for more troops if that should happen. Pam, listen with me, if you would, for just a moment here to former Secretary of State, former Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Colin Powell, yesterday. He said, we're losing at the moment, but he spoke against a surge on CBS's Face the Nation yesterday.
I am not persuaded that another surge of troops into Baghdad for the purpose of suppressing this communitarian violence or civil war will work. But if somebody proposes that additional troops be sent, if I was still chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, my first question to whoever is proposing it is, what mission is it these troops are to accomplish? Is it to secure Baghdad? In which case, the American Army isn't large enough to secure Baghdad, and we should not use our troops as policemen. Is it to take over a certain section of Baghdad? Is it to go after the insurgents? There needs to be a clear mission that these additional troops are going to be performing.
Colin Powell speaking yesterday. Pam Hess, here's the former head of the Joint Chiefs, and he says, I am not persuaded. Does his view still reflect some significant view within the Pentagon?
It does, and that's why there's been resistance to actually sending a lot more troops. There's just so many complicated moving parts here. The mission that people, and I think one of your guests later on the program is going to talk about, that a surge of troops would have would be to secure the people of Baghdad, to actually go out and, I think, sort of stand on street corners and really be an aggressive presence in the city. Powell may very well be right that the number of troops that they're talking about, which is an increase of, say, 35,000, wouldn't really be able to make a difference in Baghdad. I don't know that. That's up for the commanders to figure out. But the problem is that people have different opinions as to what's going to work. Do more troops actually inflame the insurgency and alienate the Iraqis? Do more troops bring security? Do more troops simply provide more targets for insurgent bombs? There are no easy answers here. But the officers that I talked to a month and a half ago were all saying, this is the one thing we haven't tried. Why don't we at least give it a whirl?
Pam Hess at the Pentagon, there's the story. Options will be presented. The White House will decide. Pam, thanks very much for being with us.
Of course.
Pam Hess, Pentagon correspondent for UPI. Joining me now from Washington, voices for and against a troop surge in Iraq. With us is General William Odom, retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General, former director of the National Security Agency, former Assistant Chief of Staff at the Pentagon. He's now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. General Odom, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Also with us from Washington, Fred Kagan, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Last week, he published a paper titled Choosing Victory, A Plan for Success in Iraq, arguing for a troop surge. Fred Kagan, thank you very much for joining us.
Good to join you.
Fred Kagan, make your case in a nutshell. Why are you arguing for a troop surge and what would it look like?
The key thing is that not the question of the number of troops that are going in, but the question of the strategy and the approach on the ground. The one thing that we've never yet tried to do is to secure the Iraqi population. And the problem is that that's actually, if you look at Counterinsurgency 101, one of the essential tasks of any counterinsurgent effort is to provide security to the people. We haven't done that. We've been pursuing instead this approach that says we need to train up the Iraqis and hand over to them as rapidly as possible. That isn't working, and I think it isn't going to work in a timely enough fashion to prevent the will within America from collapsing and to prevent the situation in Iraq from spiraling out of control. So what I'm proposing is to send in additional forces, perhaps four brigades, maybe 20,000 troops, into Baghdad, and then a few brigades either in reserve or to be sent to Anbar as well, for the purpose of establishing security in key sections of Baghdad. I'm not talking about doing the entire city all at once. We took a hard look at this. We had a number of military planners also look at this problem, and we identified what we think is the critical terrain in Baghdad, which we're proposing to help clear and hold. We've conducted clearing operations in these neighborhoods before. The problem is that we did not have enough troops to remain in those neighborhoods to provide security for long enough to allow Iraqi army and police to step up. This plan rectifies that by sending enough forces to allow us actually to hold the areas that we've cleared.
Colin Powell says the American Army isn't big enough to secure Baghdad, and we saw the surge sent in last summer to Baghdad that did not work. Why do you think it would work now?
The surge that went in August was a surge of about 3,500 troops. We're proposing to surge 20,000 into Baghdad, maybe 35,000 into the country as a whole. There's an order of magnitude difference in the size of these surges. People say, you know, they look at, say, Baghdad is a city of 6 million people. If you do traditional counterinsurgency measures, then you would need anywhere from 60 to 120,000 troops to secure it. If you're coming up with numbers that are higher than that, you're talking about fiction. In the world as it is today, that's not what's – more than that isn't required to secure the city. But we're not also proposing to secure the entire city. We're proposing to secure a certain area that we think is the critical battleground, particularly Sunni neighborhoods that have been under attack and mixed Sunni-Shia neighborhoods that are rapidly being cleansed. And we think we need to stop that as quickly as possible.
General Odom, give us your top-level view of the surge option at this point.
This is a tactical solution to a strategic mistake, and it's almost too ridiculous to refute. It's talking about strategy. I mean, tactics, not strategy. The issue in Iraq is how the Sunnis and the Shiites and the Kurds are going to divide the country and the wealth, or who's going to take it all. And Baghdad is only one little part of this game. Putting Iraq together in any sensible way after we tore it apart has never been possible. It took Saddam's brutal Ba'athist party to hold it together before. When we got rid of him, we ensured it would break up. 50,000 troops, even if they could keep order in Baghdad or even critical parts of Baghdad, how long are they going to do this? The next 5 or 10 years while a political consolidation takes place?
We've been joined by retired Army Lieutenant General William Odom and Frederick Kagan, military historian and resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Part of this debate depends on what the meaning of surge is. Some analysts and politicians, like Democratic Nevada Senator Harry Reid, say they're willing to consider a surge if it's brief and designed just to make a U.S. withdrawal less messy. Here's Senator Reid on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos yesterday.
If it's for a surge, that is for 2 or 3 months, and it's part of a program to get us out of there, as indicated by this time next year, then sure, I'll go along with it. But if it's put 40,000 more troops in there, you know, we've lost in Nevada about 30 troops killed. Scores have been wounded. We've now approaching 3,000 dead Americans, costing the American people $2.5 to $3 billion a week. This is a war that we have to change course. The president has to do that.
Senator Reid, yesterday, General William Odom is with us. Frederick Kagan is here. What do you think? 800-423-8255. Chip is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Chip, what's your view?
Hi, Tom. Happy holidays.
Thanks.
No, I'm an American Legion. I'm a former vet. But no long-term troop buildup. U.S. Army Lieutenant Erwin Todd called this war illegal and was ready to go to the Middle East to fight, but not in Iraq, but in Afghanistan, because this whole war was based on a score the president had to settle with Saddam Hussein for Bush Sr. Furthermore, just to have the number to help the country to stay on track, to keep Iraq from falling into civil unrest, is what I am. So what am I against? I'm against the surge.
Against the surge. We've got it. Chip, Frederick Kagan, you hear Harry Reid there saying, okay, we'd consider a surge if it's for a few months, but you're not talking surge and go. You're talking surge and sustain. What do you mean by that?
Well, the worst thing that we could do is send in 20,000 troops for an additional 3 months and then pull them back. We've been doing that sort of thing consistently since the beginning of this war, and the enemy, I regret to tell us, is on to that. They're ready for that. That's what they will be expecting, and they've got a pattern prepared to take care of that. And it's really important, if I could just stop for a moment and say, you know, there's an enemy out there. This isn't just a question of a force of nature that the Iraqis don't get along and there's this automatic, earthquake that's going on in Iraq. There are incredibly evil people there who are trying to do really bad things that we are trying to prevent from doing bad things that are going to lead to collapse in the region. And so we need to understand that there's an enemy in this equation. What I'm saying is we need to have a surge. We need to secure Baghdad in the first instance, and then we're going to need to stay. I think the time frame is anywhere from 18 to 24 months. We're going to continue to train Iraqi forces. We're going to work to hand over to them. But the issue with the training that we've been doing mm-hmm. so far mm-hmm. is that we've been increasing Iraqi forces' capability, but we haven't been getting a handle on the violence. And so their capability has been chasing an ever-rising spiral of violence. What I'm saying is we need to get the violence under control as well as building up their capability. That's the only way we're ever going to get those two things to match so that we can turn over and leave.
Now, what I've been hearing from a number of quarters is we don't have that many extra troops. We would create a surge by holding troops who are already there in Iraq longer than they were scheduled to be there and sending others out sooner than they were intended to go. How do you sustain that over 18 to 24 months? That's a long time.
It is. I commend our report, which is on the AAI website, where we go into this in a great deal of detail. We looked at the units that are scheduled to deploy. We looked at the capabilities for extending rotations and for accelerating a handful of units by a little bit. And we believe that it's possible. We make the argument in detail in the report. It would be too tedious to go through every brigade combat team, but we did it at that level.
Well, you say you've got it there, but Colin Powell says, well, let's listen to him on this very point yesterday, again, on Face the Nation, Colin Powell.
So if you surge now, you're going to keep troops who have already been kept there long, even longer, and you're going to be bringing in troops from the United States who were going to be coming anyway, but perhaps a little bit later. And so that's how you surge, and that surge cannot be sustained. The current active army is not large enough, and the Marine Corps is not large enough for the kinds of missions they're being asked to perform.
General Odom, there's Colin Powell yesterday. Fred Kagan says if you get into the details too tedious to recount, it can be done. We get it. You think the war was a mistake in the first place, and this is just, you know, throwing what good troops after sacrifices already made. But what about it? Is the capacity there if it were deemed to be necessary, important?
Well, what we've done thus far by committing troops is to increase the number of people that Fred Kagan describes as evil. We've greatly increased the recruiting for al-Qaeda there. They're sending those cadres home and spreading them elsewhere. Continuing this war aids our enemies that he talks about, like Iran. Iran is very pleased with this. Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden could not have been more pleased that we're bogged down there, that we went in the first place. They're against secular leaders in the region, and we overthrew one, so now it'll be replaced probably by an Islamic theocratic regime. So the consequence strategically of all of our troop commitments over there has been to enhance those people that Mr. Kagan would say are our enemies. I don't see how this would do anything differently. Even if you could keep peace in Baghdad for a short period of time, The civil war would go on. Even if you keep peace out on the streets, you have the Ministry of Interior and the police forces who are very much infiltrated by the Shiites, who arrest people with their regular authority and then take them out and shoot them. So that will go on, and then the Sunnis will find ways to retaliate, if not in downtown Baghdad and some other place. So the idea that you can put people on street corners in a town where they need a police force, and they can't have a police force that's effective because it's forced to choose sides from one battle to the next battle, it just doesn't make any sense. It boggles the mind to think that anybody would think that this is going to work after nearly 4 years of what's going on.
We hear that, and we see your starting point there in full opposition to the war and the strategy, whatever it was, behind it. But what about those who say, sure, I wasn't for the war either, perhaps. Here we are now. We can't let this thing fall apart and have a meltdown in the Mideast. We've got to make one more try here. And what about the Iraqis we'd leave behind to be slaughtered and the mayhem they would face?
We made that inexorably the case when we went in. And we can't prevent that. The only thing worse than people dying in vain is having more people die in vain. And the longer we stay in there, the more people will die in vain. If we'd gotten out after a year, the bloodletting would have been less than had we gotten out after 2 years. If we got out right now, we'll have bloodletting. We'll have even more bloodletting if we stay another year or another 6 months. So the logic of this just doesn't make any sense. We went through this whole argument in Vietnam. We were fighting a war which was essentially in the interest of the Soviet Union and North Vietnam, that is, the containment of China. Here we went to war where the interests served were primarily those of Iran and al-Qaeda. Continuing to fight for the interest of Iran and al-Qaeda cannot be to our interest.
Frederick Kagan, you can talk
about little tactical games about you're going to spread 20 more thousand troops here, there, and the other. That really doesn't address the fundamental issue of trying to engage in colonialism of ventriloquy with U.S. forces in Iraq.
Fred Kagan, I'll get your response to that, but let me go to a caller first, Sue from Arnold, Maryland. Hi, Sue. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm an anti-war mother of four boys, leftist, very, very democratic, and I would not send in any way send my boys for George Bush's original war, but I think now is a pretty good cause. I think we need to flood the country with troops and get our boys out of there.
A good cause, meaning what? What's the good cause you see, Sue?
Well, the keeping a whole region of the world from blowing up.
Yeah, so
letting the insurgents get stronger and cause more chaos and have it spread to more countries. I think it's a good cause to keep more people from dying in vain, as your guest said.
So flood the zone, says Sue, even though she might not have expected to hear herself saying that. Let's hear two voices again from the political realm. First, Senator Edward Kennedy on Fox News yesterday saying he's not buying into the idea of a troop surge.
There is absolute chaos that is taking place there. This country is falling apart. The bottom is falling out of this thing. And we have to put, as the number one issue, is the protection of the American troops and not let them be in a sinkhole.
And, of course, Senator John McCain has pushed four more troops there. Last week he visited Iraq. Here he is at a press conference inside Baghdad's Green Zone.
It requires us to have an injection of additional troops on the ground in order to bring the situation under control, in order that the political process may proceed.
There's the debate. Frederick Kagan, General Odom says this was wrongheaded from the get-go. You're only going to dig yourself deeper in the hole by sending more troops. What do you say to that?
Well, I'm afraid there's a lot of people out there who are not as sharp as your last caller, who recognizes that the question of whether you wanted to go to war here or not is actually irrelevant to the question of what do we do now. And I'm afraid General Odom, for whom I have the greatest respect, is still caught up in a paradigm that says we shouldn't have done this in the first place, and so what we should just do is bug out. And the problem with that is that if you look at the consequences, the likely consequences in Iraq and the region, you see that it's really unacceptable to choose that option unless you really are convinced that there's absolutely no other way forward. There's a terrific study that Ken Pollack at Brookings Institute has recently completed about the likely consequence of the spillover effect from the civil war that is certain to emerge in Iraq if we don't get this under control. And just to walk away from that and say, well, gee, you know, we shouldn't have done this in the first place, the heck with it, is a terrifically irresponsible position in my view. I think it's not a question of what we owe the Iraqi people. It's a question of American national interest. It simply is not possible for us to look at a regional maelstrom in the Middle East, which is very likely what we'll get out of this, and say, you know, golly, that's okay, but, you know, I guess we shouldn't have done this, so I guess we just have to accept that. It's a terrifically irresponsible and dangerous view. In my view, it will involve us down the road in more and more serious conflicts. I'd just like to take on one other point, which is the question of recruiting for al-Qaeda. Right now, the biggest source of recruiting for al-Qaeda is not our presence, but the ongoing sectarian violence. And that's absolutely the largest source of recruiting for the Jaish al-Mahdi and the Badr Corps in Iraq, the Shia groups. And what we're proposing to do is to try to get a lid on the worst of this violence as a way of handling that recruiting problem to some extent. If we pulled out right now, I can assure you that al-Qaeda will not stop recruiting in Iraq simply because we've left.
So we hear the critique of General Odom's position, and yet your headline is Choosing Victory. We just heard, 10 days ago from the Iraq Study Group that victory's not an option here anymore. I mean, people don't want to leave a mess, but they don't want to be stuck in a dream that's unrealistic, Fred Kagan. And we've seen all these years now of effort without success.
Listen, what can I say? We have been doing the wrong thing for 3 years in Iraq. I've been advocating doing something like this all along. We've never tried it. On the one occasion where we did try it on a small scale in Tal Afar in September 2005, it worked very well. that, in fact, is just about the only significant success we've had in this war. What we're proposing to do is to apply that model, suitably modified, to conditions in Baghdad. You know, you can look at me and say we've been fighting this war for 3 years and it hasn't been working, so there's no hope. And I'm saying we've been fighting a single strategy for 3 years, and I've always thought it was wrong. Now I'm proposing a different strategy. I'm listening for someone to offer an alternative to this strategy other than lose.
He's not offering a strategy. He's offering a tactical change. In Tal Afar, the conditions are so radically different from Baghdad that it's an utter swindle to say you can transfer them down there and make it work.
Let me get another caller in on this. Lots of people want to join us. From Mobile, Alabama, Dawn is on the line. Hi, Dawn. You're on the air.
Hi. As somebody who, as soon as I graduate in May, is going to go active duty and probably in the Army, personally do I want us all? No. And do I have any idea of what really needs to happen? Not really. But what I'm seeing is people are saying, okay, that's it. We're giving up. Everybody who's against the swelling, I haven't seen anybody come out and propose a real good alternative other than turn tail and run. And if you're against the swelling, well, then give us something viable without saying let's just give up.
So you're skeptical about the surge, but you'd like to hear another path. Let me bring one more voice into this.
I'll give you another path.
Oh, General Odom, please.
Okay. I propose not just getting out. I pointed out that we can't develop another strategy for the region to deal with what we've unleashed as long as we're bogged down there. We are strategically and diplomatically paralyzed. Nobody's going to help us, and we can't do it by ourselves. Getting out, unambiguously leaving Iraq, is the first step toward being able to go back and develop a coalition of forces, including the Europeans, the Japanese, perhaps even the Chinese, the Indians.
And do what with
that
force?
Do something about limiting this overwash of chaos that accurately is being described, which we perpetrated.
Would you put that force, that multinational force, back into Iraq or at the borders?
No, not into Iraq. I think one of the major things, the single thing that could begin to tamp down the disorders that we've unleashed would be some kind of working relationship with Iran. Iran will get nuclear weapons no matter what we do. We can bomb and that won't stop them. If we are getting out, you bet the Iranians will be willing to talk to us. If we're willing to take nukes off the table, we're probably going to have a cooperative relation there. We need them terribly in Afghanistan to counter the Taliban. They don't like the Taliban. The Taliban is backed by Pakistan. So we're going to lose Pakistan if we don't find some kind of better relationship with the Iranians. There are a number of other things we have in common with the Iranians, and there are people, in spite of the rhetoric there, who probably would do this. Even if they won't, it doesn't make any sense not to try.
Let me get one more caller from Nashville. Montanez is calling. Hi, Montanez. You're on the air.
I mean, this is lunacy. I mean, what we're actually composing is a woman who can't take care of her children actually having more children. What we're talking about is sending 30 to 60,000 more poor people, what we're calling a surge, to secure more oil for America. And we've got America, which is still under a violent control that we can't even get under control. I mean, we're sending more poor people to fight a rich man's war.
But what if we pull out and it all falls apart? Do you agree with General Odom that we can sort of work this from the outside with politics and multinational forces or not?
We never should have been there. And
but we're there.
We're there. All right, now that we're there, the only viable solution that we can have as a country is trying to find a way to build either an embassy there, because we can never leave now. We can never leave.
Yeah,
no way we can ever leave Iraq.
We hear that dissatisfaction in Nashville, but also the contradiction built right in. Montanez, thanks very much for your call. We've been joined by retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General William Odom. He was director of the NSA, Assistant Chief of Staff for Intelligence at the Pentagon, 81 to 85. We're also joined by Frederick Kagan at the American Enterprise Institute. He recently published an article headlined Choosing Victory, a Plan for Success in Iraq, Surge and Sustain, he says, for 18 to 24 months at a higher number of troops. We're joined right now also from Washington by retired Colonel Paul Hughes. He led the Iraq Study Group's Expert Working Group on Military and Security Matters, served in Baghdad in 2003. He's at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Colonel Hughes, thanks for being with us. What do you hear in this argument?
Well, I hear a great deal of confusion among Americans Americans who are at home listening to this, Americans who are studying this, about what are our interests in Iraq and in the region. Americans really need to understand there are a lot of risks that are associated with a collapse of Iraq as it exists today. And these risks will definitely, without a doubt, become the catalyst for a regional war throughout the Middle East. Now, that has consequences, both for Americans and for the rest of the world, and it's something that America needs to take on seriously. But the campaign plan that Fred Kagan has described, I find wanting in the greatest degree. It ignores Iraqi political realities. It doesn't address the issues and the concerns Iraqis have that relate to their sense of sovereignty, the fact that they feel like they're occupied, the lack of support for governance issues.
So are you against a surge, against the surge and sustain idea of more troops for quite a while? What exactly don't you like?
Well, if you want to surge into Baghdad, you have to first understand the facts on the ground. Baghdad is a city, a metropolitan area of 6.5 million people. And based on our experiences of doing peacekeeping, nation building is really what this is getting to, and other similar events,
yeah.
You need one peacekeeper or one security troop for every 50 citizens. We're talking about a need for a force of 130,000 people.
I mean, additional 130,000, or just in Baghdad, you're saying?
Just in Baghdad alone.
Yeah.
Baghdad is a troop sump.
And no one's saying that's available. William Odom says, get out of there. Once you're out, you put together a multinational force outside Iraq, get the politics going. Are you on board with that?
Well, I think that there needs to be a comprehensively structured plan that both decreases the visible American presence on the ground in terms of troops, while additionally we are building up capacity for the Iraqi government and its military. You can't do one without the other, and this has to work together in concert. As somebody pointed out, I guess it was Pam earlier today pointed out, every part of Iraq is different and requires a different method to solve its unique situation. For example, Tal Afar. Tal Afar was great, except there was no institutional structure left behind for reconstruction to take place, and so it's gone back to where it was a year ago.
So maybe more troops would have helped with that. But let me put this to you. Your Iraq study group, when it's all said and done, a lot of people saw that as, you're saying, train up the Iraqis and begin to get combat troops out in the first quarter of 2008. That's not so long from now. It looks sort of like, train and go, and with a lot of skepticism about whether that training would really be effective. So you talk about the risks, but did you really solve those with the Iraq Study Group recommendation? Did that reflect your view, Colonel Hughes?
You need to, Americans need to understand the Iraq Study Group report is not a strategy. It is an idea that was put together for Americans to try and achieve a consensus position where they all can agree these are our interests and these are some ideas that we ought to explore and put into work if they are effective in the view of the commanders on the ground. Certainly, I'm not foolish enough to say, yeah, that's the silver bullet, because we never believed we were going to find the silver bullet. Uh-huh. But you need to bring Americans together on this issue. If America is divided at home, I can assure you that all the great brains in this town will never come up with a strategy for success. We will not win a war if we're divided at home.
So there's consensus on the one hand. There's strategy and tactics. No wonder Americans are confused. Let me go to Matt in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
We're well. What do you see, Matt?
My question is, if we're sending a surge over there, what are these guys going to do? I mean, are they going to go in and lay the hammer down? Is it going to be a combat force that's going to go in and say, okay, this unit's going to go in here and they're going to take care of al-Sadr? Is this unit going to go in here? And they say the Iraqis feel like they're occupied. They are occupied. We went into their country and kicked their leader out, and now we're kind of like, it's like asking the Japanese army to go ahead and take over after World War II, and we're going to kind of tell them.
So,
what
are you? Are you for laying the hammer down, whatever that means, Matt, or not?
I wish we would have laid the hammer down when we first went in. I mean, it seems like a lot of these guys are Vietnam era. I'm a Gen Xer, so a lot of these guys are Vietnam era that are running this stuff, and they have a defeatist attitude.
Let me put it to our panel, General Odom and Fred Kagan. General Odom, first to you. What Matt says, let's go in if we're going to go and finally lay the hammer down. Is that an option as you see it, and what would that mean?
Well, to me, it means the following. If you kill enough people in Iraq, you'll have laid the hammer down, and I've tried to figure out what that might amount to, and I think it would go into millions until you totally intimidate the population. I think that's feasible, but I don't think it's politically something that makes any sense for us, and I don't think it improves stability in the region. I think it'll make it even worse. When you find yourself at a position that the German army found itself at Stalingrad, where it was overextended and it was the strategic situation was going against it, then staying the course made no sense, but Hitler insisted on doing that. And that's kind of where we are. wisdom in strategic thinking is not being tough tactically and laying the hammer down. It's deciding where it is wise to withdraw in order to attack someplace else and to change the nature of the strategic balance. By the longer we stay in Iraq, the worse the strategic balance is for us. And the precondition for making any progress in the region, and it doesn't mean putting together coalition armies and marching back into other countries. It means trying to build dams around and limit the kinds of forces of chaos that we have unleashed. So you've got to see this from a strategic viewpoint, and it's an intellectual and moral cop-out to say, well, we're already past that. We've got to stay with it now. You know, we said that in Vietnam. When we got out of Vietnam, things recovered for us very quickly. They won't recover as quickly in this case. But otherwise, the parallels with Vietnam are staggering.
Frederick Kagan, so how about it? Are you suggesting, are you imagining with your surge and sustain, is that lay the hammer down? Is it a nuanced, heavier presence there? You know, is there some go-all-out strategy or tactic that we have not exercised here yet? And what about William Odom's view that, you know, none of this is strategic? It's all kind of playing in a sandbox that is lost.
One of the things you do when you don't have a good plan of your own other than surrender to every enemy you can find, which is basically what General Odom is suggesting, is you say that any plan to actually do something isn't strategic. You know, we laid out this proposal, and the proposal is basically the equivalent of, in case of emergency, break glass and implement this plan. We put this together because we think that we're about to lose this war if we don't turn this around. We think that there is a possibility of turning it around. We think the precondition for any progress in the Iraqi political system and training Iraqi troops and creating any positive environment in the region is getting the security situation under control. We never claimed that this was a plan to fix all of Iraq's problems. That would have been insane for us to try to put together this quickly and thus briefly. We actually have multiple phases that are going to be addressed in our own planning project that are going to be coming out over the next few months that address some of these other issues that people have raised. But if we don't get the security situation, especially in Baghdad, much more under control than it actually is, then there's no prospect for being able to reverse the course of the spiral of violence that we're engaged in right now.
Break glass in emergency. And Fred Kagan says we're there. John's calling from 29 Palms, California. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
What I would like to say is, you know, 20,000 to 30,000 troops, you know, that's definitely a Band-Aid. But my question is everyone's focusing on Baghdad. Why aren't we sending 20,000 or 30,000 troops to, you know, where they really need it, and that would be Ramadi?
Because that's out in Anbar region, the area that might become a terrorist base if the U.S. leaves?
It already is.
Is that Colonel Hughes?
No, that's General Odom.
General Odom already is, yes. We hear that. Fred Kagan, let me put the number question to you. You say 20 or 30,000 and sustain. Do you really see that as a sufficient number, or is your headline, choosing victory, does it suggest that it would also be a down payment on a ultimately even bigger presence there? Are we going to have to transform the shape of the U.S. military, as General Schumacher is saying recently, maybe even much more than that? Are we going to have to do something to get up to 200,000 to 250,000 to more to ultimately win? And is it worth it in your view? Is it necessary in your view? Might it be?
Well, in the first place, no, this isn't a down payment. We looked at this hard, and we've come up with the most conservative estimates, that is to say the safest estimates about how many forces would be required rather than the minimal estimates, which is what we've been using for military planning all along. The U.S. military has been trying to do this with the lowest number of troops. Our plan, we looked at what we thought would be needed, and then we added some more, and then we added some reserves. So we don't see this as something that this is just the beginning, and then there's going to be a lot more behind this. But I do think that the Army needs to be larger. I think the Marine Corps needs to be larger. I think we cut too much in the 90s. Even independent, if we weren't fighting in Iraq, I started making the case for larger ground forces in 1997, and I've been maintaining that case ever since. We absolutely do need to increase the size of the ground forces. Getting Iraq right should not be this much of a strain on our military. If you look at the scale of problems that we might have to worry about in the world down the road, Iraq is not on the high end of that scale. So it's very, very disturbing to me that we're having such a hard time dealing with this problem, and I think we absolutely do need to increase the ground forces.
Mm. Could I ask a question? Yes.
Can you cite a case where the U.S. has been able to consolidate such a fragmented political country and govern it essentially through training up military forces before there's been any political consolidation. The only one I've heard mentioned was...
No one's proposing to do that, General Odom. Listen, you know, the thing is, what interests me about this is we put out a plan that has specifics in it, and the result is that everyone says, well, how are you going to solve every other problem? I'm asking for an alternative to surrendering to every country in the region.
It's not surrender. It's a strategic withdrawal. You're using an emotionally loaded term.
Oh, I apologize. Mm.
It's painful when there are lives on the line and American troops on the line. Right there somehow. Jack's calling from Mount Holly, Vermont. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. You know, it strikes me that people are not taking a step farther back and realizing that, you know, Ethan Allen was considered evil and a terrorist in Vermont. And I'm not saying these are nice guys who are over in the Middle East that the U.S. has chosen to fight. But the U.S. has decided to get into a part of the world where holding a grudge for 600 years is no big deal. And the bottom line is that since the invention of the machine gun, there haven't been too many invading forces that have started a battle that have ended up winning their cause. Because if somebody invades my hometown and I know I'm going down, I'm going to take five or six guys with me. That's just a fact of life. They want to go home, I got nowhere to go. We should either declare defeat and get the heck out now and save as many American lives as possible. And, oh, by the way, the domino theory scare tactics that were used in Vietnam, by now I guess the communists have made it all the way to Topeka, Kansas. That was wrong, too.
Yeah, Jack, we hear it, and we appreciate your call. Let me get another. Our time's running down here. Nicholas is calling from Rochester, Massachusetts. Nicholas, you're on the air.
Hey, hi, Tom.
Hi.
You can count me against this thing they call a surge. You know, and I guess it's because I hear General Barry McCaffrey, retired general, on several occasions say, we don't have the troops. He has said that two-thirds of the brigades in this country are not battle-ready, simply because their equipment is worn out, they're in depot maintenance, and besides the fact that they're in depot maintenance, he has said that depot maintenance, the depots are running at peacetime level, that is, a 40-hour work week. So once again, we're ready to send these theorists that are out there are ready to send troops back into battle, ill-prepared, just as we did in the beginning.
Yep.
It's wrong, and I'm against it.
Nicholas, we hear it. Stretched troops, there's no question about that. And we certainly are reading about shortages in the home bases as well. Colonel Hughes, what about an interim surge? Would you favor that? You know, as Senator Reid was saying there, for a few months? And if is not being for a surge mean you're for defeat?
Not being for a surge does not mean that you're for defeat. You know, that's very emotional language that people are using. You know, if you're in the business of strategy devising, one of the things you have to always keep open is an option at the strategic level. Just because we might have to withdraw from Iraq doesn't mean that Iraq is lost, does not mean that the entire Middle East is going to go up in flames if left unattended. The United States certainly, prudently, should be thinking about how it can increase diplomatic ties throughout the region to help contain whatever violence that falls into Iraq stays in Iraq.
And are you really confident that we could put up a diplomatic dam around this thing, or will it inevitably slosh out, consume the region?
It's going to slosh. It's going to slosh. I think that the United States has been very imprudent in its ability to make friends over there, and we are going to be in for a very rough time. Putting more troops into Iraq, I'm not in favor of it because I don't see how they are going to change the facts on the ground. People say we're going to seize victory. I want to know what victory looks like. When the smoke of the battle clears and the American infantryman is standing there, what does victory look like? And nobody has answered that question yet.
Fred Kagan, we've just got half a minute here. The debate is hot, and we hear it. What do you expect to come out as policy? Do you think the president's going to be with you on this?
know. What I know is that the president's under a lot of pressure to find a new approach to a war where we have not been succeeding, and I know the president has said that he's not going to accept defeat, and that's been an incredibly important element in keeping us in the game. I hope that he will choose a sound strategy, whether it's mine or someone else's, and I hope that he will remain committed to trying to work this out.
General Odom and the Pentagon, will they fall in behind a surge if that's what the president asks?
The military, of course. They don't have an option, and they shouldn't do otherwise than to do what they're told on that regard. I mean, strategy is above the level of the planning staffs on the ground in Iraq and even in the Pentagon.
There it is. A surge may be coming, though General Odom and others we've heard this hour say don't do it. Frederick Kagan says yay. A lot for Americans to chew on through these holidays. General William Odom and Frederick Kagan and retired Colonel Paul Hughes, all in Washington. Thanks to each of you for being with us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.